Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. How and when and why do our children learn to lie? You know, when you start thinking about the scriptural understanding of sin, lying comes in very, very early. As a matter of fact, we understand that a part of the very core of what it means to sin is to lie against the truth. And so lying is a matter of grave consequence, and parents instinctively know that. And yet somehow virtually all children at some point learn how to lie. Some become very proficient. There's new research out, and Poe Bronson, writing in New York Magazine, has produced what I think is one of the most fascinating pieces of analysis on the issue of children and lying. He's done some outstanding stuff looking at childhood, and a part of what he really brings to the surface here is the fact that children are actually learning to lie at much earlier ages than we anticipate. And furthermore, they are following the example and the affirmation in lying of role models teaching them how to lie. And those role models, by and large, turn out to be parents. Parents who are not even intentionally teaching their children to lie, are not consciously thinking about the fact that that's what they're doing. They are in an unspoken conspiracy with their children to teach them how to lie. Now, Poe Bronson suggested it works this way. Number one, with young children, parents help them to learn how to answer untruthfully for public relations. When someone says, "Do you like my hair?" the child learns to say yes, even if the answer is no. And the parent affirms the child with a nod, a smile, and a pat on the head. And the child says, "All right, I have just learned that the way to get ahead here is not to tell the truth." The other way, Poe Bronson says, that children are encouraged to lie is in adolescence and in older ages of childhood, where children face kind of a don't ask, don't tell reality from some parents, because the truth would lead to conflict and confrontation. So it's like the parents, some parents, would rather actually be lied to about the activities their children are involved in, rather than have to face the truth, because the truth would lead to a confrontation, which might lead to conflict, which is messy. We're going to be talking about this research today, and as Christian parents, we really need to have a conversation about how we teach our children to tell the truth. How we avoid some of the pitfalls of the research indicated by Poe Bronson. And let's acknowledge on some of these issues, it takes some sensitivity to teach children how to tell the truth, and yet how to tell the truth in the right way, in love. How to tell the truth without lying, and yet also how to understand how to speak to people in a responsible way. We ought not to teach our children to lie. We ought not to allow our children to lie. The conversation to join the conversation is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Earlier this week, I published an article at my website at albertmohler.com about this issue. I linked there to Poe Bronson's article, and I have received a wave of responses from listeners to this program and readers of the website, especially from parents who have raised some good questions, and we'll deal with them. I hope you'll call with your questions today. Join the conversation. Again, the number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. At my website overnight, I published an article entitled America's Most Sinful Cities. And it comes down to the fact that Forbes magazine, which is big time into rankings, has decided to try to rank American cities by sinfulness. And interestingly enough, they went back to the Christian tradition, and they have resurrected the idea of the seven deadly sins, and they have tried to come up with a way of tracking cities demographically by how involved they are in some measurable quantity that would lead them to rank the cities by sin. For instance, when it comes to lust, the magazine's editors decided to use the sales of contraceptives and sex materials in stores as a way of measuring relative lust from one community to another. Now, let me just tell you what the rankings look like, and then we'll talk about what they might mean. First of all, when it comes to the most lustful cities, Denver finished first, followed by San Antonio, Portland, Seattle, Salt Lake City, Boise, Washington, D.C., Cincinnati, Columbus, Baltimore, and Buffalo, Rochester. The research firm of A.C. Nielsen, which is very much into counting things, used sales figures again for contraceptives and sex items in ranking the list. Now, just looking at that list, now all of a sudden the citizens of Denver are told they are the most lustful in America, or at least that there are more lustful people in Denver per capita than in other communities. But when the top 10's looked at, you also have some very interesting places. Not only cities on the coast, kind of the fast-paced cities such as Portland and Seattle, but cities very much associated with a more conservative interior, such as Cincinnati, Ohio, very German Catholic in background, Columbus, Ohio, Middle America. And, of course, when you look at some of the cities here, you just have to wonder, do we even know what's going on there? Boise, who would have figured? In the most jealous city, this came down to crime rates for theft of personal property. Memphis topped that list, followed by Charlotte, San Antonio, Seattle, Providence, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, Columbus, Oklahoma City, and Chicago. For the most obese, well, the figures here come from the health statistics having to do with obesity. And according to those statistics, which would measure supposedly the sin of gluttony, the top-ranked city is Memphis. It was also tops for most jealous. But Memphis is followed by Birmingham, San Antonio, Riverside, San Bernardino, Detroit, Jacksonville, Nashville, Oklahoma City, Kansas City, San Diego. And again, health statistics really pointed to that reality. Under the most avaricious, the cities with the most greed, measured at concentration of great wealth, and that's something Forbes ought to know how to count. The city that came in on top was San Jose, California, followed by San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, Boston, New York, Dallas, Los Angeles, Washington, and Miami. The thing to notice there is that I found that the most predictable of the list, because you're looking at cities that, by any even casual analysis, represent great concentrations of wealth. When it came to the city that demonstrated the greatest amount of wrath, well, the city that tops the list is Detroit. The murder statistics are what were used to correlate this data. Detroit is followed by Baltimore, New Orleans, Newark, St. Louis, Oakland, Washington, Cincinnati, Philadelphia, and Buffalo. You're looking at extraordinary murder rates there compared to the rest of the country. What cities are most sedentary, demonstrating the sin of sloth? Well, the magazine identified Memphis at the top of that list, followed by New Orleans, Las Vegas, Detroit, Birmingham, Louisville, Kentucky, home of this radio program, San Antonio, Jacksonville, Nashville, and Miami. You have to wonder if the readers in slothful Louisville will ever get around to reading the article in the first place. When it comes to the sin of pride, which city is most vain? Well, the editors decided to use the concentration of plastic surgery and plastic surgeons. And topping that list, Salt Lake City? That evidently is the case. When you look at per capita plastic surgeons against population, topping the list is Salt Lake City, followed by San Francisco, San Diego, San Jose, Miami, Louisville, Nashville, Virginia Beach, New York, and Los Angeles. Now, what interested me in this particular exercise is, of course, it's what in philosophy you would call a tautology. It's an argument that is not conclusive. It's simply up for debate. It's more or less for illustration. The fact is, there is no meter in which you can judge what are the most sinful cities. But when you think about it, there are some cities that are certainly associated with sin and with certain very specific sins. When it comes to a city like Las Vegas, let's just remember that what happens in Las Vegas doesn't stay in Las Vegas. And that's the reason it's talked about. That's the reason it becomes a major tourist destination. From a Christian perspective, it's important to realize that in the Bible, cities are associated with concentrations of sin. All the way back to the story of Abraham and Lot. Lot chose the cities of the plain, which, including Sodom and Gomorrah, turned out to be very evil as a concentrated human misbehavior. Then, of course, you have the cities in the Old Testament that clearly stand for, and in the New Testament, that clearly stand for concentrations of power, egotism, and human pride, Nineveh, Babylon, and Rome. And in the Christian tradition after the scripture, it's also interesting. Just take John Bunyan's great work, Pilgrim's Progress. Well, it's Vanity Fair that is the city that is the great seductive center where sin is celebrated. Now, one of the issues that could come out of this from a Christian perspective is that as we look at these cities, we realize what mission fields they are. We also are humbled by the fact that as these heartbreaking statistics are read, Christians and Christian churches have just not been very effective in reaching the cities. There may be very many reasons for that, but the cities seem to have some defense mechanisms over against the gospel and over against evangelism, and perhaps it is also because cities are places where anonymity conspires with the concentration of sinfulness and privacy to make some of these things more difficult. Perhaps looking at this list, we can not only consider as an intellectual exercise just how valid these numbers might be, But consider how heartbroken we should be in looking at the cities and realizing our evangelistic opportunity. Maybe churches and Christians looking at this will be inspired anew to consider our responsibility to take the gospel to the cities. We can hope so. We'll be back to talk about how children learn to lie. We're going to talk about how parents actually, sometimes wittingly, sometimes unwittingly, teach children to lie. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Children, it turns out, learn to lie at earlier ages than most parents may even recognize. Really good lying children can start at ages 2 or 3. And by the way, with young children, the ability to lie is very much correlated with intelligence. So in other words, the smarter the kid is, the more likely he is to be able quickly to abstract himself and begin to think about what a parent wants to hear and calibrate the words in order to match that expectation. In other words, to lie. Several years ago, Ralph Keyes wrote an article. In fact, it was turned into a book entitled The Post-Truth Era. He suggested that truth is now, and these are his words, quote, on the ropes as a virtue. Now, most parents, and I don't care if you're talking to parents in New York or in Peoria, you know, in Andalusia, Alabama, or in Atlanta. I don't care if you're talking to liberal or conservative parents. They're most likely to say they don't want their children to lie. And this is just one of those virtues that that almost no one is going to argue against. So you have the fact that most parents don't want their children to lie, and yet most children become rather adept, rather even expert at lying at very early ages. I'm reading to you here from the article by Poe Bronson. He's writing in New York Magazine, and he's written some of the most fascinating stuff on childhood I've read in recent years. In his article titled Learning to Lie, he says this: in the past few years, a handful of intrepid scholars have decided it's time to try to understand why kids lie. He also reports this, that children, and especially teenagers, are lying to their parents on a range of 36 issues studied by the research. I'm quoting to you from the article. Out of the 36 topics, the average teenager was lying to his parents about 12 of them. The teens lied about what they spent their allowances on and whether they'd started dating, and what clothes they put on away from the house. They lied about what movie they went to and whom they went with. They lied about alcohol and drug use, and they lied about whether they were hanging out with friends their parents disapproved of. They lied about how they spent their afternoons while their parents were at work. They lied about whether chaperones were in attendance at a party or whether they rode in cars driven by drunken teens. End quote. Now, in this research, 98% of the teenagers admitted lying to parents. At the same time, the same figure, 98% of the teenagers said that lying is wrong. So in other words, you have 98% doing it, 98% saying it's wrong. But even as they say it's wrong, they do it. And not only do they do it, they admitted doing it a great deal. Now, as I said, it turns out that children learn to lie very early. It seems to be tied to intelligence. And some of these kids are beginning to lie much earlier and much more skillfully than a lot of people imagine. Really smart kids, again, at 2 or 3. Again, Pope Bronson explains, quote, although we think of truthfulness as a young child's paramount virtue, it turns out that lying is the more advanced skill. A child who is going to lie must recognize the truth, intellectually conceive of an alternate reality, and be able to convincingly sell that new reality to someone else. Now, just insert myself here. Again, that's intelligence. It's the intelligence of the child anticipating what someone wants to hear and then reframing his own words to match that expectation. Back to the article. Pope Bronson writes, therefore, lying demands both advanced cognitive development and social skills that honesty simply doesn't require. As one scholar said, it's a developmental milestone. Now, that's very interesting, isn't it? You know, you're dealing with the development of your children. You say, well, are their feet growing? Yes. You know, are they growing in weight and height? Yes. Are they growing in intelligence? Yes. Have they developed the ability to lie? Well, yes. Well, good. You know, some people are going to say that just shows they're intelligent. This puts parents, according to Pope Ronson, in the position of being either damned or blessed, depending on how they choose to look at it. If your four-year-old is a good liar, it's a strong sign she's got brains. And it's the smart, savvy kid who's most at risk of becoming a habitual liar. So in other words, the smarter the kid, the greater the danger that habitual lying will become a communication mechanism. Now, one of the most fascinating aspects of all of this is where Pope Ronson, and he's writing not from a Christian worldly perspective, but rather from a perspective of a rather elite community in Manhattan, where parents, nonetheless, are very concerned about the moral development of their children. And he writes that parents are actually becoming those who teach their children to lie. And I want to read to you directly from his article because you need to hear it in his words. He says, "The most disturbing reason children lie is that parents teach them to. According to this researcher, Talwar, they learn it from us. Quote, we don't explicitly tell them to lie, but they see us do it. They see us tell the telemarketer, I'm just a guest here. They see us boast and lie to smooth social relationships. Consider how we expect a child to act when he opens a gift he doesn't like. We instruct him to swallow all his honest reactions and put on a polite smile. Talwar runs an experiment where children play games to win a present, but when they finally receive the present, it's a lousy bar of soap. After giving the kids a moment to overcome the shock, a researcher asked them how they like it. About a quarter of preschoolers can lie that they like the gift. By elementary school, half of the kids will lie to say they like the gift. Telling this lie makes them extremely uncomfortable, especially when pressed to offer reasons why they like the bar of soap. But kids who shouted with glee when they won the Peking game suddenly mumble quietly and fidget. Meanwhile, the child's parent usually cheers when the child comes up with the white lie. Often the parents are proud that their kids are polite. They don't see it as lying," said the researcher. She's regularly amazed at parents' seeming inability to recognize that white lies are still lies. When adults are asked to keep diaries of their own lies, they admit to about one lie per every five social interactions, which works out to about one per day on average. The vast majority of these lies are white lies, lies to protect yourself or others, like telling the guy at work who brought in his wife's muffins that they taste great, or saying, of course this is my natural hair color. Encouraged to tell so many white lies and hearing so many others, children gradually get comfortable with being disingenuous. Insincerity becomes literally a daily occurrence. They learn that honesty only creates conflict, and dishonesty is an easy way to avoid conflict. And while they don't confuse white lie situations with lying to cover their misdeeds, they bring this emotional groundwork from one circumstance to the other. It becomes easier psychologically to lie to a parent. Now, what makes this research even more interesting is that when it gets to older children and adolescents, it turns out that a good number of parents are playing a lying game with their children, especially parents who don't want to become confrontational with their children. Did you do this? Have you ever smoked? Do you hang around with these kids? The parents want the answer to be no. The child knows that the parent wants the answer to be no. And oddly enough, the parents even want the child to lie. No, I don't hang around with those kids. No, I don't go to parties without chaperones. No, I didn't do this. No, I didn't go there. Because if the child did tell the truth, then the parent would have to deal with it. And in this day in which parents are so confused about their own authority and so dismissive of their own responsibility, many parents would actually rather get the lie than have to deal with the truth. Pope Ronson says, if you want to know where our children are learning to lie, look in the mirror. If you want to know where they're learning to lie well, look in the mirror. If you want to know why they think you actually at times want them to lie, look in the mirror. Now, when you look at research like this, it's obviously a wake-up call. It's the kind of wake-up call we desperately need to hear, and we as Christian parents, you know, we've got a special investment in this question. Now, many readers of my column have already written back to say, all right then, what do you want the child to answer when the lady says, did you like the muffin? We're going to talk about that too, about how to teach a child to be sweet and kind and respectful, and how also to teach the child to tell the truth. It is still tied to intelligence, but more important than that, it's tied to teaching and to modeling for parents. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. As I said, Christian parents have a particular interest and investment in this question because we understand that truth is not just a matter of social convention and expectation. It's a matter of God's expectation, of the Creator's expectation of His human creatures. And we understand that God hates lies. And so that really does raise our moral concern about the question of lying, and especially because we love our children. And we want our children to understand the necessity and virtue of being honest, of not lying. And yet, Poe Bronson's article really does hit pretty close to the marrow, doesn't it? Because, I mean, he's really suggesting that we as parents sometimes unwittingly and sometimes in ways we don't even want to admit to ourselves, teach our children to lie. And he gives these two very clear examples. And as soon as I read these examples, I realized, boy, he is really onto something. Teaching children at younger ages how to tell white lies. Teaching children at older ages that sometimes a lie is a way to avoid conflict. And, you know, that's really an insidious proposition because we all avoid conflict when it's avoidable. But conflict is often absolutely necessary if you're going to deal with reality. And so if you are teaching your adolescents to lie to you to avoid conflict, or if you're teaching your young children, preschoolers and elementary school age children, even middle school age children, to lie, tell little white lies in order to be polite, we really are subverting the virtue of honesty. We're defining the truth down, we might say. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-TALK. That's 877-893-8255. I'd love to hear from some parents out there, from some of you who are thinking about this. And I know you are because I've gotten an awful lot of mail just in the last week or so on this question. I'd like to know how you're handling these issues with your children, what you've learned about how to teach children honesty, maybe by some difficult experience of how you discovered that your children were lying to you. How do we teach our children to be people of the truth rather than people of the lie? That's a big question. It's an urgent question. And let's not lie to ourselves as we think about this question. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We got some people coming in right now, calls coming in from across the country. I want you to join the conversation as well. You know, when I look at this particular situation, when I look at a secular writer dealing with secular research who shows how that 98% of teenagers lie, and when you look at the research, by the way, it's very credible. It's the kind of research that should have our attention because this is actually a very large study dealing with a lot of teenagers, asking them about 36 different areas of their lives and asking them to be honest about whether or not they lie to their parents. Now, here is one of the research issues you have to take into account there. When people tell you they lie, they're probably telling you the truth. That's just one of the factors about research. In other words, they know you want to hear that they didn't lie. So if they tell you they do lie, as Poe Bronson writes, they probably do it a lot. They probably learn how to do it at a very young age. Let's talk about this research and what it means for Christian parents. Let's go to Chris calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Chris.
It's an important topic, Dr. Mohler, and we are very concerned with our daughter lying to us. And in order to address those issues, we made her sign a contract that identified clearly what we expected from her and how we wanted her to be honest and the punishments that would happen if she lied to us. And the most extreme punishment for big lies was that she had to stand out on the street corner wearing a sandwich sign that said, "I lied to my parents," for 30 minutes.
Have you had to do that?
She has come close to having to do that, but we have not yet reached that level because she followed the contract at the other levels, and we punished her, and then we rewarded her when she told us the truth when she got in trouble, and she didn't get punished as badly, and the contract worked out very well.
You know, that's a great testimony, Chris. I really appreciate this word from a parent. Let me ask you, how old is your daughter now?
She's 14.
Okay, so, looking through 14 years of experience raising a child, were there points at which you recognized that you might have actually been encouraging the child to lie? I mean, especially with this research showing about how parents encourage children to tell white lies.
My biggest concern was when she lied and we would get the punishment, but then we wouldn't follow through all the way on the punishment because we'd get soft.
Yeah.
You know, changing the grounding from a week to 2 days because we felt like you've been grounded enough. But if you say a punishment, you have to follow it all the way to the end or they'll never respect you.
Well, Chris, that's a very good point. And by the way, that's a matter of your truthfulness as well. I mean, when we threaten a child with a punishment and then don't follow through, we make ourselves to be liars there as well. Now, I have a fistful of questions from readers saying, all right, if we don't allow and encourage children to tell white lies under some circumstances, just how do we handle it? Well, let's talk about that. The phone number is 877-893-8255. I've got some suggestions for you when we come right back. 877-893-TALK to join the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Two data points, very important from this article. Number one, children learn to lie earlier than a lot of parents think. And they think the child's too young to lie. Well, probably not. Secondly, children lie a lot more than parents want to think. Two data points that are very important, and by their own admission, especially older children and teenagers are saying, yeah, I lie a whole lot to my parents. It's just easier that way. Then 2 points of analysis, also very important about how parents encourage lying. Number one, with younger children, by encouraging them to tell white lies, as they think that's what we want them to do, probably because a lot of parents, well, that's what they want them to do. That's what the parents would do under the same circumstance. And so they get reinforced in telling white lies. White lies, of course, become larger lies. And the whole phrase white lie just means a lie for politeness sake. Then the second issue has to do with adolescents and older children, where a lot of parents just don't want to know the truth. Because if they know the truth, they'd have to deal with it. And we've got a lot of parents that just want to deal with it. So it's don't ask, don't tell. In fact, it's ask and get told a lie and prefer the lie to the truth. And that's a conspiracy that is right from the pits of hell. That is just insidious. But the more you think about it, I think a lot of parents will recognize, yeah, I know parents that act just that way. I know kids who, in a serial fashion, lie to their parents. The parents know it. The parents probably prefer it rather than have to deal with the truth. Well, I said I would answer the question. At least I would offer some suggestions about how especially to deal with this first category. How to deal with young children and children as they grow through developmental stages in answering questions that are difficult to answer. Poe Bronson writes about the research where children are told they're going to get a present if they finish the game. They finish the game and they're given a bar of soap and they're asked if they like it. And they say, yes, they like it because they think they're supposed to say they like it because an adult's given it to them. Well, here are some concrete examples. And there are two very important points I just want to make here. And I'd love to hear from you still. Time to join the discussion by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Point number one, help your children as they grow older to realize there are some questions they can't answer. There are some questions they shouldn't answer. Children are naturally taught to respect the authority of adults. And when an adult asks a question, they want to give an answer. They are affirmed in giving an answer. But there are some questions as they grow older, they need to realize they can't answer. Such as a question asked by someone who says, am I fat or am I pretty? You can't answer that question. And as a matter of fact, no one really has a right to ask that question, especially of a child. So that's putting the child in a very awkward situation. So you need to teach the child in a situation like that to say something like, I really love you or I really like you. In other words, don't answer the question. Instead, teach your child to understand that when they don't know how to answer a question, that they aren't to find comfort in a lie, but are rather to give a response that isn't a lie, but is polite. Or they can even say at times, I don't know. And that's very disarming to an adult because the adult then has to define the category, and so you're going to lose that whole process. That conversation is going to move on to something else. Or say, I don't know how to answer that question. Now, that can be socially awkward, but it's a lot less awkward than the child sometimes saying exactly what he thinks. And because we all who have had young children know that young children are inclined to say exactly what they think until we somehow think we've civilized them by telling them not to say what they think. And some even to say, just go ahead and tell a lie. Say you did like the muffin. Say you are pleased to receive the bar of soap as a gift. The second thing I want to suggest is converting the question. And, you know, this isn't just about children. This is about adults as well. And so we need to think this through, because after all, we're modeling these things for our children. Our children are watching us. They're listening to us. So converting the question works this way. When someone says, did you like the muffin? Well, let's say the muffin was dry and distasteful, but this person made it for you because this person loves you. You can always convert the question not from, did I like the muffin, to, I like so much the fact that you cared for me so much you made me a muffin. I just can't tell you how much that muffin meant to me. Because that ought to be the truth. That muffin should mean a whole lot to you, even though you didn't like it. Your taste bud didn't like it, but your heart should have. You can always convert the question like that. Do you like this dress? You can always say something like, you have a way of dressing in that just fits your personality. And because, it, by the way, that's almost always true. We generally dress in a way that reflects our personality. And so it's easy to say, you know, that's not my taste. My personality is different. I would have worn something else. But, you know, that just fits you perfectly. What people are looking for there is a worth question, an esteem question, an affirmation question. And you can find a way to say the right thing rather than a lie. You don't have to answer the question as it's asked. And we need to recognize that a part of the exchange in a conversation is a question that deserves to be asked with an answer that deserves to be given. And when the question really doesn't deserve to be asked, I mean, it's unfair to ask a little child, do you like my hair? You probably don't want to know exactly what kind of hair a little child might choose for you. That's just the inappropriate kind of question. You need to teach the child, however, not to lie. Because the moment we begin to reinforce lying in our children, and children saying what they think people want to hear, here's the whole pattern point. When we teach our children to calibrate the truth to what they think people want to hear, well, we're sowing the seeds not just for what we consider to be the social etiquette of politeness. We're sowing the seeds for our own children to lie to us about what really matters in life. Because in the relationship between parents and children, there is always the constant threat of conflict. And sometimes that conflict can be really consequential. And let's face it, sometimes that conflict is absolutely necessary. And that's where you get to the second point of Poe Bronson's research, indicating that there are so many parents who just would prefer to be lied to rather than to have the truth delivered to them by their children, because then they'd have to deal with it. I'm going to have to deal with the fact that my child drank, my child smoked, my child disobeyed me, my child broke the rules. I'm going to have to deal with the fact that you have now presented me with a challenge, and it's going to take some of my time. I'm going to have to devote some time to you now, and it might mean punishment, discipline, it may mean correction and teaching. It's going to mean some necessary time where the parent is going to have to spend time and emotional energy and spend some parent authority capital in order to deal with the situation. But the moment you allow, tolerate, much less encourage your child to lie to you, it's a moment you have made a pact, which means that you now no longer deserve the truth. If you don't demand the truth, you don't deserve the truth. If you make a pact with your children and allow them to lie, then you better get ready for the lies. They're going to come for the rest of your life. We better not tell lies, and we had certainly better not teach our children to lie. We must not accept the lie from our children. I would encourage you to go to my website at albertmuller.com. Find that article entitled, Are We Teaching Our Children to Lie? Go ahead and check out Poe Bronson's research in New York Magazine. It ought to be good fodder for conversation parent to parent, parents with each other, with the church, and parents with children. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Muller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Muller Program. We began by looking at that Forbes article on America's Most Sinful Cities. And, you know, it's fascinating that Forbes offers a map. It's an interactive map at the website. And if you go to my website at albertmuller.com, you look at the article. If you go to the originating Forbes article, which I link right at the very beginning of the article, there's a map of the United States. And you can move a cursor over the map based upon certain sins, and it will flash up those cities where supposedly that sin is concentrated. And wouldn't it be something to be able to have that? Wouldn't it be something to be able to do that? Wouldn't it be something to be able to say, I want to know where sin's going on. I want to know what's the most sinful city. I want to know what to avoid. I want to know where to go. So let's take a cursor on the map. Let's have an interactive mechanism that tells us where the sin is. You know, I guarantee you, what if a pastor had that ability? What if a pastor could run the cursor over the pews of his sanctuary on Sunday morning and find out what the sins are. I'm not sure we can handle that knowledge. I'm not sure that we could be good stewards of that knowledge. Okay, let's bring that home to what we were talking about today. Let's say that we had a polygraph in our home. And every day we could take our children and line them up, put them in the polygraph machine, strap them in, give them a little sodium pentothal, a little truth serum, and say, only answer these questions. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know? Sounds kind of ludicrous. Not only does it sound like science fiction, it sounds like some kind of horror movie. Sounds like, I think most people think, some kind of child abuse. Well, the reality is that we shouldn't have to have a polygraph to trust our children. We should be so close to them, so much involved in their lives, so clearly teaching them to tell the truth and expecting them to tell the truth, so consistent in the way we deal with the truth and in the way we deal with our children, that we actually don't need a polygraph. We can just look at their faces. We can just look at their eyes. You know, the whole premise of the polygraph is that you can lie with words, but you can't lie with your body. That's why a polygraph measures these different kinds of bodily functions and heart rate and all the rest. The reality is, if you know your children, and if you're really holding them accountable to the truth, you're going to be able to look into their eyes, and you're going to really know whether they're telling you the truth. You know, we just need to hold ourselves and our children to that standard. And, of course, given the issues raised in this article, we also have to teach our children how not to lie under circumstances in which it would be more convenient to lie. And of all things, we better not encourage our children by subverting what we teach them by how we model for them how to deal with those situations. We'll be back next week for Intelligent Christian Conversation about the things that matter. We're always glad to hear from you. Write me at albertmuller.com. Feel free to send a question, a comment, or perhaps you want to send along some information, a data point, an article, something you think that needs some comment on this program. We're always glad to hear from you. I'll meet you next week for the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmuller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmuller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.